What's up, Blue Jays fans, and welcome to another edition of Jay Bird Watching. We are the official podcast of Jays Journal, fan-sided Jays Journal, and we are part of the StadiumScene.tv network. We are a week in the books, pretty much, a week in the books of Blue Jays baseball. Opening weekend, I should say, was a success. And their trip to the Bronx, even though right now, as of this recording, is being drenched out in rain, they can't lose the series. So that's a good thing in and of itself as well. We're going to break everything down, Blue Jays, tonight. And joining me to do so is the usual co-hosts of mine. We have Craig Borden, Chris Key, and Brendan Penicar. And Chris, I just wanted to ask it's Thursday evening. How do you feel about Kevin Biggio batting ahead of Santiago Espinal tonight?
And poke.
Chris is hoping for a rainout so it doesn't actually.
Yeah, happen. We'll see if this game actually gets started. But
I think the better question is why is Ramil Tapia batting fifth?
Speed, get on base.
Yeah, there's a lot of questionable things going on with tonight's lineup, Ben.
I kid.
No, you don't.
I do. So look, we're gonna break all things down Blue Jays tonight. As I said, I'd say overall their opening six games as of this recording have been successful for the most part. They are currently leading the AL East. I think Tampa Bay lost today. They did. So they are leading the AL East with a 4-2 record. So this is where I hope they will stay. And also, as of this recording, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., I think, with four home runs, is leading the American League in home, or maybe even MLB. I'm not too sure. But all things good for the Blue Jays, so let's get into it. There was a lot of hype entering the season, as we've covered so much so during the offseason and during the lockout, that which shall not be named, I guess. But even though this first six games have been successful, they did show that this season is full of ebbs and flows, especially in April. So, Chris, I sort of teased you to begin with Kevin and Santiago Espinal. I'm sure there are other things that stood out to you, but you can sort of unload here. What specifically stood out to you within the first six games of the season?
How quickly this lineup goes from, which is a little bit of a backtrack on what you first said, how quickly this lineup looks or goes from being one of the fiercest lineups we've seen in recent memory, especially with this team, to how thin it can look now. And you pair that with some struggles from the bullpen, some lackluster outings in the pitching rotation. We're going to get to that in a little while. It's a little bit of an up and down week, wasn't it, boys? We were definitely riding a high. Well, shit hit the fan in the first game. Let's just say that. But it's amazing, and maybe that's a little bit indicative of how this first week went. That it's kind of up and down and a little bit of a roller coaster of really highs and really lows. We're seeing wicked offense from Springer, and before he went down, Teo and Jansen, and obviously Vlad is just doing unworldly things. But there's definitely some concerns. The Barrios coming out and not even making it out of the first inning. Kikuchi, I don't think he was as bad as what a lot of people thought he was. I think he was. Once Kikuchi stopped essentially throwing his slider, he was actually good. Maybe not good, but like he was the number five starter at that point, and they weren't making any contact off the fastball. And I don't know if that was the game plan or just what he felt comfortable doing. It was a really boring game to watch.
Or listen to, seeing I didn't have any feet.
Yeah.
Listen to paint dry.
Gausman was all right. I guess not exactly what you wanted to see from him. Like, you see what Robbie Ray did in his first start, and you look at Kevin Gausman, and you're like thinking, ooh, that's a little bit of a trade-off right now. But then Ray got shelled last night, I think it was. Anyway, Manoah came out and did Manoah things. And I think that if nothing else, that was the most encouraging that I saw, was just Manoah coming out and being very rock solid in the middle of that rotation when we desperately, desperately needed it.
He needed a stop. He came out and stopped it. It's good shit.
Okay, Craig, you can spend on it.
I think the one thing that was obviously, we had plenty of pitching woes. The bullpen actually ended up looking very well, you know, rounded in the midst of all this. You know, Simber did Simber things. And the only one that really had an up and down from Tyler Saucedo already. Guys, it's how it is. But I think the fact that we obviously have Jordan Romano's crushing it. He just looks like the guy that we were expecting him to be and how he picked. He literally is the franchise record holder right now for the most saves in a row consecutively. So
Adam and I have to eat some words on that already.
Oh, yeah?
still young.
Still young. We took the pledge.
Yeah, but to that point, out of all the things that went wrong and good and everything this week, that was a nice highlight. And then the fact that this offense can come back apparently from anything.
Son of a bitch. I thought
was really cool.
Oh, Brendan.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that stood out was definitely Stringer so far. I know Vlad has been on a different planet, but Adam, I just pulled it up. You sent this to the group earlier today. With George Springer in the lineup, they're 52-32. Without him, they're 43-41. He takes you from, like, assuming everybody's healthy, if you remove Springer from a fully healthy team or a good team, George Springer brings you to a great team / borderline elite if you're getting good starting pitching. He proved that again last night when he put them ahead 4-3, and that ultimately was the winning run and winning RBI that scored. And you're seeing why they signed him to that and why people are going to continue to fall in love with him now that he has a full season in Toronto. Yeah, I know we're going to expand on the starting pitching a little bit, and I can save most of my comments for that, but... there was some good and some bad from, I think, all five. I mean, Barrios looked really good through the last night. And then as we were talking, like, it came off really quickly for him last night. Gausman, as you said, Chris, I think that's a very typical first start of the season type start. There was some good. The splitter looked nasty. And then there was some bad around a little bit. Yeah. Gave up a lot of contact. But Manoah so far in the pitching side of things and Jordan Mano have been the stars and the studs. And I think we said this last week. I don't think it would surprise any of the four of us if at season's end, Alek Manoah could have the best numbers on this stat. And I know that it's not really a pitcher win stat, but I think the stat was that since Manoah, in all of Manoah's starts, the Blue Jays have only lost 4 games. And obviously those aren't all decisions that reflect in his record, but they win nearly every single time he takes the mound. And that's the definition of an ace. No matter how you're going to go and get it done, your team will always almost always win when he's on the mound. So if Manoah can keep that up, the fact that he added a little bit of velocity with his fastball and the changeup, which is
the difference.
Exactly. The changeup sets him into an elite category potentially. So keep your eye on Manoah the rest of the way. And I know we'll expand on that a little bit, but he's already looking like he could be the ace of the staff.
Did you notice a little bit more oomph in Manoah's delivery that he's like stepping to his right a little bit more? After he throws some heat.
I did.
Like,
that's a little concern.
Yeah, he's putting I thought it was, when I first saw it, I thought he was pitching hurt. I thought that he was pitching bothered. I now am, you know, looking back on it and with the success of the start, I think he was just trying to give his whole upper body into every single pitch, and it was effective.
He's a big boy. That's a lot of momentum coming off the mound.
That's true.
A lot of momentum.
I need a buckle.
So, yeah, I think given the role that was the opening series, I would have liked it for them to sweep Texas. I think we even had that. Most of us had that as a sweep, if not all of us. I know we're going to get into Ryu, and Brendan, much to your dismay, we're going to unpack that when we talk about the rotation. But overall, you know, given, Chris, you touched on game one, I personally think, and it has a lot to do with the victory and the way they won, but I think that's perhaps the best opening day I've ever seen in this team.
I agree.
Yeah, it was
really awesome.
One of.
Yeah. And well, you could see that the was energy.
Go ahead. What was that? The first comeback from a 7-0 deficit since like 1950 or something like that. It was the, we talked about that when I was on the walk-off podcast this past weekend, and it literally was like, okay, nobody in this whole conversation is born since the last time this happened. Yeah. That's pretty impressive. On opening day, that is, that kind of thing happened. So if I didn't make that point clear, my bad.
No. It's one of the games that you saw the energy from everyone. It's specifically, what resonates with me is Gurriel's catch in the ninth inning and just how, mm-hmm. you know, hyped up he was to get that win. Yes, you would have liked to see a lot more out of Berríos. I'm chalking that up to first game jitters. I'm not saying it's not worthy of concern, and again, we're going to extrapolate on that a little bit more, but I'm willing to forgive that, and the win has a lot to do with that. Given the fact that his next start wasn't nearly as, but it was still not as good as I would have liked it to be. But overall, I think, you know, given what I'm seeing, how Montoyo is handling the majority of the bullpen, it looks better, even though a small sample size. Six games, his handling of his management of it has improved. Not that he could have made a lot of wrong moves, but it wasn't too bad. Again, I know this is going to come across as bias. I don't like the idea of platooning Cavan and Santiago Espinal, and this may come as a hot take. I'd rather have Santiago Espinal take the majority of reps at second base right now, just because he's in.
That is a hot take for somebody in this conversation. Well, oh, wait, he's the one that said it.
Well, given the fact that we don't have Teo in the lineup and Danny Jansen, you need to muster up as much offense as you can. So good.
We talked about this, I think a few of us the other day, but how much do you think that this Santiago Espinal fund is the fact that he's actually legit seeing fastballs at the bottom of the lineup and getting him where the book's kind of out on Kenny Biggio?
I don't know that the book is out on Cavan Biggio because his eye is elite. Like, I will say that his vision at the plate is elite. And I don't know, maybe this is me covering for him. He gets robbed on a lot of calls. I don't know. I think when it comes to Espinal, I just think the confidence is there. I think it's resonating with him. I think he could always play. We saw bits and pieces of it last year, and he came prepared this year. And again, much to my achy breaky heart, much more prepared than Cavan, it seems. So I'm eating it. I'll eat the Romano talk too. It's fine.
It's all good. Just was curious because, like I said, that is something that I honestly was wondering how much that was factoring into Danny Jansen's success before we talk about the next piece of that. You know, he's been in the nine hole and he's got Springer behind him. Right. I'm sorry, I want to make sure I get him out before I have to deal with Springer, especially when, to Brendan's point, that Springer's been just raking since the opening day started. So,
yeah. All right, well, before we move on to talk about injuries, as you set up for me, Craig, does anybody else want to make any comments about the first six game? Anything else that stood out to you guys that you want to touch on?
Raimel Tapia has been very underwhelming, and that's all I'll say. It's very, very early, but... ground ball, he's very much as advertised with the ground balls, and it is not good.
Well, you don't like that negative, what is it, launch angle?
Yeah, the negative 0.4 launch angle, yeah. Or whatever it is. To tie in with your next topic and what Brendan just said, be careful what we wish for as fans, because everybody... and I'm going to say damn near every Blue Jays fan wanted Reese McGuire and Randall Grichuk off this team, including myself. Wouldn't it be nice to have both Reese McGuire and Randall Grichuk right now?
Would it? I can't get there with Reese.
I can get there with Reese because he's a better defender than all of them, and it saves us watching fucking Collins swing at nothing.
Because I think those
were some of the ugliest swings and at-bats I've seen in a long time.
And the throwing error.
Yeah, that was bad. Oh, that was Heinemann.
That was Heinemann.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that was Heinemann.
In
Buffalo.
I think...
all day in Buffalo.
I can get there with Randall Grichuk. I feel like we have a little bit of recency bias when it came to Reese McGuire because somehow he came out of left field, no pun intended, last year, and it was actually productive offensively. And you're right, he is a good defensive catcher, but I don't know that that's a sustainable performance by a Reese McGuire. I think right now we would probably have just as many strikeouts if Reese McGuire was still on this team.
But I would still rather no defense and no offense. All I keep hearing is that they love Collins' bat. They love Collins' bat. They love Collins' bat. He has no track record of ever having a bat. Like,
no.
None. I don't know where this narrative is coming from that he has a good stick.
Do we have the Pete Walker of hitting coaches all of a sudden that I'm not aware of, that we can recruit guys and turn them into not so. Shit? Sorry, I said it.
At least Reese offensively gave you a competitive at-bat. Zach Collins and Heineman have not done that so far. Like, Collins hasn't even come close to making contact at all. Reese at least would have put the ball in play a couple times.
Yeah.
And
like Craig said, he's at least worked with his pitching staff as well.
That's, I think, the bigger thing right now. That's really the miss. And this is why I understand that it's not fair to bring up Gabriel Moreno with what he's had going on and didn't have spring training and everything, but it literally is the same argument. You got two guys, you brought two guys in that don't know this pitching staff anyways. And Gabriel Moreno had no spring training with any of the guys on this team. Do you want to just throw a guy into the fire and hope for the best, or you want to work with shit?
They won't bring him up until May because they're still going to screw around the contract.
Service time. Yeah,
correct. I get that. But to that point, I think they're going to be having this similar conversation in a month.
It really
especially
depends.
If Danny Jansen isn't going to be hitting. And Alejandro Kirk is apparently only going to be catching 3 of the 6 games every week is kind of what they were saying. So that means Zach Collins or Hinneman are going to be in the lineup.
Well, at that point, if this injury to Danny Jansen is prolonged, are we in favor of bringing up Moreno in May? Yeah.
If he continues to hit the way he started in Buffalo and play defensively, you want to win ball games. We said this last week, the exact same reason they called up Alejandro Kirk at the end of 2020, because he just couldn't stay down anymore because he kept on hitting. Yeah, exactly. They got nothing from the catcher position at the end of 2020. And he finally there wasn't a hole in the 9th spot or the 8th spot. Yeah. If Moreno keeps this up, what he started in Buffalo, in a season where you want to win a championship, you have to get production out of that position, especially if Jansen's going to be out for a little while. So I bring him up 100% at the start of May.
I give him I give him 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
And then I bring him up. Well, like, honestly.
Well, that's May, right? That would be.
Yeah,
beginning.
Well, yeah, it'd be beginning of May now. But yeah, just to give him like two and a half weeks of seeing some live pitching and trying to get his feet wet again in baseball. Yeah. But like, Alejandro Kirk hasn't been good either.
No,
through the first two series, like he's putting bat to ball, but like he's hitting like barely over 100.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's early. There's going to be some ups and downs, and some guys get hot before us. Everybody in the world can't be Vlad, and like as great as that would be to have 1 through 9 George Springer and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., it's just not going to happen. You're going to have these holes, and you're going to have these streaks, and you know, maybe come mid-May, beginning of June, Alejandro Kirk is on a complete
tear.
Fire streak, and we're all talking about how he's the best hitter on the team through a 2 or 3 week stretch, and we all forget about it. But as for now, if Moreno is still going the way he's going right now, I wouldn't be surprised if he's up in 2 weeks if Danny Jansen's going to be out any extended period of time. They're saying 4 weeks minimum.
That's plus a rehab assignment that's going to be added onto that.
So probably another week on top of that.
I'm going to say, Chris and everybody, right around Victoria Day, long weekend, that is the third weekend in May. That's when Jansen can come back at the earliest in my mind.
Yeah. That's probably what I would say.
That's a long time to go without any production from the catcher spot. So, I think Moreno will be strongly in consideration to be up before then.
Now, what you have to think as well is roster sizes first.
It's true.
So I have this catcher thing figured out if this experiment fails.
Yeah. So the nice thing is Collins does have an option still. So he can go down, and I think Heineman can go down as well.
Definitely, yes. Yeah.
He's
a waiver claim anyway, I think.
Yeah. So you do have some things to play with, but
yeah, Jansen, open that up a little bit more. It looks like it's a left oblique strain, which as someone that's trying to produce offensively, that's going to be costly. And let alone crouching down, having to move your body, block pitches and whatnot, gets shit out of the dirt. That's costly. That's very painful for a catcher. You want to make sure he's right, which would lead me to believe, based on my complete non-medical knowledge here, but knowing what it's like to hurt yourself, that could linger. You know, that could linger for quite a while. I have no doubt that he's going to come back maybe a little less than 100% just so he can stay on the team. And, you know, because we've said it, this is make or break for Danny Jansen, right? And it's not off to a great start when it comes to injury, which is terrible to say because he looked pretty good. You know, he was looking confident, and I don't know. There's a little bit different about Danny Jansen and his approach this year. And it's unfortunate that he had to bite the bullet with this injury. But so as you mentioned, Craig, Alejandro Kirk is going to be catching primarily, even if it's just three or four times through a week. Also, for Rock, again, we're recording this on Thursday, Teoscar Hernandez suffered a similar injury last night in an at-bat versus the Yankees. Cole was just throwing him heaters, and you could see that in one particular thing. Teo did not look good after, and he grounded out to first, and he just jogged, and even Buck was calling it. He was like, he's done. As mentioned, the Jays have a lot of firepower in this offense, so you could think that this, and perhaps they can, but again, if you look at the lineup for tonight's game, the bottom half of it is rather thin. So, Brandon, we'll start with you. We did touch on Danny Jansen and, you know, the options there with Gabriel Moreno coming up maybe in the beginning of May. But given how thin the depth is with the outfield, if you had to choose which is going to be more costly, assuming that they're going to be out for a similar period of time, what are you putting your money on?
It's a great question. Both provide so much value, especially if Danny Jansen's going to be hitting out of that 8 or 9 spot. But it's probably Teoscar because of what we've seen so far from Raimel Tapia. The only thing that hopefully could magically happen is they somehow fix Bradley Zimmer and he lives up to his top 25 prospect status that he had at one point in his career. However, I do think that reinforcements in the outfield could come decently quickly. And that's in a guy I think I forgot about and just saw an update on yesterday, but Dexter Fowler has begun to sign it.
I was going to say, oh, come on. It's Dexter Fowler season, bitches.
Yeah. he's basically starting from ground zero in simulated games right now. But, you know, give him 2-3 weeks, give him some at-bats down there, put him on a rehab assignment. And although, look, at the end of the day, I think Teoscar is actually going to be out for that long. And because they have said it's not as serious as they thought, and I sent it to you guys last night, I believe. In 2020, down the stretch for that playoff run, when they qualified, he had the exact same injury, and he was back in the minimum 10 days and was able to swing and be fine. I think it'll be longer than that this time, but I'm not sure how much longer that will be. I think he'll be back before Danny Jansen, I will say that much, especially because he can play in the outfield. But if it does linger, and if they continue to get nothing from Tapia, then I think you might see Fowler rushed up a little bit quicker. And at that point, I'm fine with that because I think Fowler might have something left with the bat. Definitely not defensively, but with the bat, he can at least provide you maybe something because that just doesn't go away even with age. Obviously, he slowed down, but he's a better hitter at this point than Tapia. He's a better hitter at this point than Bradley Zimmer. So let's roll with Dexter Fowler if Teoscar is going to be out for a little while.
Chris?
If you guys heard ATL this week, they did touch on Teoscar's injury a couple of years ago, and they did say that because of the playoff run, he did rush it back, and he was still in significant amount of pain. He just played through it. It's going to be one of those things that may linger with him for the rest of his career. This is what... laugh all you want at this name, but this is what derailed Brett Rick was oblique injuries.
Yep.
It's true.
They can be crippling to a ball player because everything you do has some kind of rotation and you put a little bit of strain in that area and you're down for the count. You can't do what you want to do and perform at a high level. It you could see that, like, Teoscar made, I don't know how he made contact with that ball when he grounded out, but
oh.
like it was a pretty half, It was a half-hearted swing, to say the least. Knowing the history with that, I'm pretty disappointed that Charlie Montoyo didn't take him immediately. You know the history. You can see he's in a significant amount of pain. At least go, like, call time and go and see if the guy, like, go and talk to the guy at least. Give him a minute. They didn't even do that. He waved him off. And at some point, you have to be the manager and take a second and say, no, you're going to talk to me and tell me what is going on. I'm pretty disappointed in that. That once again shows that Montoyo, like, the inmates run the asylum still, for lack of better words. That he doesn't have as much control, and I know he's a player's manager and keeping everything light, but at some point, you got to be the man, and you got to say, no, let's stop here and think about this, because we got 158 or 157 more games to go. Mm-hmm. We need you in as many of those as possible, and one more swing can put you down for another 2 to 3 weeks. That could be the difference maker between being in and being out at the end of the year.
Yeah. Like I said, I was screaming at the TV. I couldn't believe it that he, like, I was like, oh, you know, what's up? Mm-hmm. Oh, you want to stay in? Oh, okay. I'm going to turn around. It just seemed, it was, don't you, I understand he wants to win, but if you saw anybody doing that, and I'm like, there's no way in hell he's going to stay in this game. Anybody you ever see that's literally grabbing at a body part before they, you know, eventually go out, there's usually something wrong. This is like the same thing as Buck Martinez saying his leg wasn't broken a million years ago, which we all know he's broke because we've heard it thousands of times on the broadcast. So, this is the kind of stuff that I wish that he would just, you know, man up and go out and do that. Yes, it sucks. There's a lot going on in that game. Things are going out of hand. We were ahead. We were now trailing. All that good shit. But you weren't going to be winning that game with a hurt Teoscar Hernandez in there. And if he's already hurt to the point where he's grabbing at himself and, you know, feeling around his hip bone and everything there, that next swing could be the reason he doesn't come back at all for the whole rest of the season. And you can't take that chance when he's one of your best players.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you guys this, and not to hijack if you're gonna
continue, go for it.
Adam.
Table flip.
The lineup with Teoscar and everybody else in it, and I mean, I guess Jansen that too, but I'm not gonna count him. The top seven are incredible. You remove Teoscar, and you still have a very good top six. And Matt Chapman hasn't really gotten going with the bat yet. Bo hasn't gotten going with the bat yet. And Lourdes is kind of maybe starting to get out of it a little bit. In terms of guys who you could least afford to lose on offense, where does Teoscar rank for you? Because Vlad is number one. Springer has a case for being number one. They're like 1A, 1B. I would have Bo ahead of Teo. Then I think you start to get into, is it Matt Chapman because of his defense and what you know you can get offensively? So in terms of guys that you can afford to get away with being out for an extended period of time, where does Teoscar rank? Because for me, he's either 4 or 5. And I think they are still have plenty of offense in the tank to be able to get by without him for a little while.
I'm not concerned with the offense.
Yeah,
I'm concerned with the depth behind him in the outfield. It just doesn't look good. And it's not like Teo is a great right fielder anyway, right? Sure. And
but
now,
he's our right fielder.
Yeah. He's good enough, right? And his offensive production, he's Jose Bautista, just a little bit better in the outfield. And maybe a slightly less good hitter.
I don't know, man. There's some numbers that are pretty damn on top.
Teoscar's a better than Bautista ever was.
Okay.
He hits for average. And I'll let to see if I can find the graphic again and share it, but it's gotten to the point where it's nuts and bolts, like, dead on right now. It's almost like we have 2.0 version Bautista all over again.
Bautista had a better arm, but Teoscar has a bit more speed.
The drop-off in defense compared to offense is a similar slope. I just think that when you see what you have in the offense, in the outfield defense, it leaves you wanting more. And you can make the same argument for catcher. And even though it's a very, very important position, I just prioritize outfield just a little bit more.
For sure.
So I think his absence, I would probably rank him around four.
Yeah, I think so too. There's a case between him and Chapman because of Chapman's D and how much he'll help the pitching staff. But
yeah, but you can get that from Espinal, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You could place him there and be all right. But Chapman's bat at the end of the day will through and it'll be miles better than Espinal's at the end of the day.
But today, like, even though Chapman's not hit, he's not hurt. Today, like, giving Matt Chapman the night off tonight, I think was a smart move.
Yeah, same.
Let
him end on a high from yesterday.
Yeah, and give Espinal still some time.
You want Chapman to play. He'll want to play all the games against Oakland as well.
True.
Yeah, exactly.
True. I just think with Teoscar Hernandez being out, again, I mentioned this in the group chat. I don't trust how this handles and reports injuries. I just don't, especially with how they handled Springer last year. It was so wishy-washy and on and off, and they don't have to be honest about it. I understand keeping things close to the vest. I totally get it. But at the same time, when you say it wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be, well, how bad did you think it was going to be? Because if you're thinking it was season ending, that means he could be back in August. So how bad did you think it was going to be? I really would like to know. I would like to have a timetable. I know, I understand they put him on the 10-day IL. Fine. But I don't think we're going to see him in 10 days. I really don't. No. And
you want him right for when he comes back too.
Yeah.
The ship's not like, leaking water too fastly or anything like that.
Not yet.
I would rather them take an extra week or two and make sure he is
right.
And he's not going to go back on the aisle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they learned that lesson last year with Springer. I would hope they don't make that same dumb mistake again.
Yeah. 100%.
To go on what you said though, Brendan, I'm going to go a little higher, and I would say before the season started, I would have said he was number two.
Wow. Okay.
I tend to agree with you.
With how hot Springer has been and being the catalyst on this offense, Springer's my number two right now. Or you could, like you said, a 1A, 1B with Guerrero.
Yeah.
But he's, even with Springer jumping him there, I would still say he's number three.
Yeah. I guess there'd be a case with Bo there too.
You could, but you've dealt without Bo right now.
Yeah.
My biggest catch on that whole thing is Mr. Consistency right now is Teoscar Hernandez. He has been everything to this team the last 3 years.
Yep.
And the fact that going into this season, expect to Chris's point here, you didn't know if you were really getting a legit superstar back with George Springer being fully healthy.
Mm-hmm.
The bet was pretty good there. Don't get me wrong. But to the fact that, is he going to do what he did when he was in Houston? Or are we going to have another injury-riddled season? We didn't know. So to that point where Teoscar just came out there and has been solid RBI guy all day, every day for this organization since becoming a full-time player, I would say he's got to be right up there with Vlad in that conversation. And then Bo to the other point.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I don't like losing either of these players, but the difference between losing Jansen to Teo is that you still have the whisper of Mourinho in the background, and you could rest on that and say, it's only a matter of time. Like, you can go through a shitty April. If you can make it out of April, I think the Blue Jays are going to do better than this, don't get me wrong, even without Danny Jansen and Teo. But if you can get out of April at a 5 record, I'm okay. Like, I would like it to be better, but I don't have that feeling of, well, you just lost your playoff spot in April. You can still excel from that, 100%. Right? So if you can tread water at the very least in April and then wait on that to evaluate what's going on with Jansen, and if it's still not looking great or if he still needs a little bit more time, you bring up Mourinho. Now I'm fired up. Now I'm only down really one position. 100%. So
to your point, to your point, I renamed the episode from when I sent this to you guys to, it's only been 1 week.
And if by then Teo is on his way back in the beginning of May, then everything's good. But I don't know. I just wish there was a little bit more transparency when it came to this team. They don't owe it to me. They don't owe it to anybody. And the priority is to win games. Just frustrates me. And it's been an ongoing theme. Specifically, you thought Anthopoulos was secretive. Woo! This front office is very secretive, specifically when it comes to injuries. And it's just, hair up my ass. All right, anyways, let's move on to the rotation. It hasn't been great, with the exception of Manoah, as we've been saying. They've gone through it at least once. Berríos has gone twice. They've left a lot to be desired, again, with the exception of Manoah. There's something about Alek Manoah pitching in Yankee Stadium that just makes him a superstar. So Craig, again, you just mentioned that you titled this episode, "It's Only Been a Week." But...
So you took pledge.
You did.
That's what in our pod, apparently.
You took the first week pledge, the first 6-game pledge. Yeah. It's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. Don't worry about it.
Are you concerned with the rotation, given that we've vocalized concerns, at least either part of this group or the majority of it, or all of it, has vocalized concerns when it comes to maybe Berríos with his velocity in spring training, Kikuchi with the nerves that he was exhibiting, and Ryu. Are you concerned with how this rotation has been performing, albeit majority of them just one start so far?
Yeah, concerned? Yeah, it sucked. There's no other way of saying it. We're lucky for wins is really the summary of how the Blue Jays' first week went. And that was because our offense just completely went off and had one of the best opening day comebacks in Major League Baseball history. So to that point, am I concerned going forward? I think we already saw the first bounce back. Berríos pitched well yesterday. And in the midst of that, he looked dominant for those first four innings. The Yankees didn't have a clue. The Yankees finally got smart and changed up their attack plan, and the Blue Jays started paying for it. The only thing we were talking about in the group chat that I could have even asked for, maybe the difference is maybe there was a difference between starting the bullpen up a little early when he was that close on pitching count to be, he was already at 80-something pitches almost, or damn near close to it when that inning started. So maybe it could have gotten to, maybe it was just a 3-2 game at that point, something stupid. But that's really nitpicking that whole thing, because I would have loved to see him get out there and keep going. But to that point, you had a chance to be the confidence builder, and it ended up coming out with him being a nail-biting candidate at that point. Am I really going to keep us in this ball game, right? So it sucked to the point, but I don't think this is what the Blue Jays rotation looks like at the end of the year. I think this ends up being one of the strong points for this team, regardless of how it showed out this weekend. And like I said, I think we saw the first step in the right direction with that. And we have Chris Keys, you know, perennial Cy Young pick for the, crystal ball here of Alek Manoah running away with this shit this year. So.
Pitch like it.
Sure is. In the Yankee Stadium, again. So correct me if I'm wrong, boys. Is that 3 or 4 amazing starts for him in the Bronx now?
I know it's 2, at least 2. Sure.
I want to say that was the third.
I want to say 3.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure he got 2 starts in Yankee Stadium last year. Because I remember having that dawning moment. I'm like, okay, his debut was in Yankee Stadium, and he just annihilated the Yankees for 5-6 innings.
Yes.
And then he did that same thing. Yeah, exactly. And then he just keeps getting better in Yankee Stadium.
Yes.
I want to say he
was... eight inning, or a one-hitter in 8 innings or something, outing or what? It's just nuts.
I think he was the only one to miss that 4-game series where they swept them last year. And I think that was the only series at Yankee Stadium after. It might have been 2. Might be 3, regardless.
Well, Brennan, you can expound on that, specifically with Ryu. Yeah. I know we joke about it, and you were a big proponent of Ryu, and there was somewhat, and I don't say this to be mean, but there was somewhat of a Ryu meltdown on Twitter after his start, and you had some people in one camp that just, the numbers don't lie, he hasn't been good so far with one start, albeit just one, but for a good portion of last season, he just didn't show that he was that great. Aside from Ryu, you don't seem that much that concerned with Ryu, given our group chat. But aside from that, do you have concerns with the rotation?
No, and you can chalk it up to a shortened spring. It's still taking these guys some starts to build up their pitch counts again. And I didn't pay attention to Berríos' velocity last night, but from the little bit I did see of his start, because I was driving up north yesterday and listened on the radio, it seemed like there was a lot of life on his fastball and there was a lot of zip. It looked like vintage Berríos in the parts that I saw before the fifth inning when he gave up the
back-to-back.
Yeah, exactly. So Berríos I'm fine with. I think that it was a very good step in the right direction. I have a very good feeling when this game does start in 25 minutes that we're going to get a good outing from Gausman. There was enough good stuff there. His splitter, I was up in the 500 Saturday's game, so I couldn't quite see how good the splitter was, but people were sitting in the 100s saying it is one of the nastiest pitches we've seen from a Blue Jay starter in a long time. So Gausman, I have zero concerns about. It was a very typical first start of the year. You go five, you get some hard contact, but keep your team in the ball game. So with that, after one start, I'm not counting Berríos' second one last night. The power rankings I had for them after the first turn through was very obvious. Berríos was five, just because he only went to point one. Manoa was one, and then Gausman was two. And then the debate come down to, is Ryu the third, or is Kikuchi the fourth, or whichever order you want to place them. And this could definitely open up a longer debate. I put Ryu third because of what he did for those first three innings. I don't know how you can ignore
vintage, man.
Get off the dick, Trenton. He's not.
Wait. Let's answer the question. Oh, man. Seriously. How can you ignore what he did the first three innings? He was pinpoint control. His velocity was the highest we've seen it. And his
Chapman got him out of the first three, dude. The infield got him out of the first three innings.
For the defense with Kikuchi, because Kikuchi's exit velocities, his first three innings, were worse than Ryu's.
Yeah, but Ryu gave up four earned runs.
Yeah, but it was all because of a misplay on defense made. The concern
Kikuchi only gave up a two-run home run in the only ballpark that would have went out in, or else it would have been a fly ball out.
He needed every ounce of that ballpark to get through three and third, Kikuchi. The hard contact at the beginning was scary, to say the least. Now, the concern I have about Ryu...
Once he stopped throwing the slider, he was fine.
Exactly, and the third inning from Kikuchi was great, and that's what we're going to get more of next year. The issue with Ryu that I have is once he gets to a mess, he cannot get out of it, and we saw that on Sunday. But the first three innings, that was the ace that we saw the first 2 years as Blue Jay.
I'm not saying ace. That's not ace material, Brendan.
At the time, he was our ace.
It was. There was nothing different.
Tanner Roark was also in your fucking rotation, maybe.
Oh my god.
The cabin is an all-star.
You are drinking far too much Kool-Aid, man.
Nobody can agree with me on that. That's fine.
No, that's not true. There are people out there that agree with you on this.
Good, and they're smart, because I think I'm smart on this one, to be perfectly honest. So
I don't know. It encouraged me. I was happy to see him actually moving in the right direction. So if that's that's where we're going here, and then 2 weeks, I'm excited. Like Brendan, I'm perfectly fine and happy with that.
Yeah, absolutely. We all want him to be good. I understand there's pessimism because the worst stretch of his career with the Blue Jays came at the worst possible time. Yeah. But you can't ignore the first three innings, and you can't ignore the first 4.5 months of his season last year. We had a 3.22 ERA. So we all got to calm down. Focus
on when you're making $20 million a year, you need to put up when your team needs you and not falter in those big games.
So,
and if it happens again this year, I'll be the first one to say you need to just buy out his contract.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because he can't be a part of this team next year if it happens again.
Yeah, and I'm fine with that. I'm fine to admit it when the time
comes. No, you're not.
I'm fine.
You're in complete denial.
The time is not now.
Hey, we won.
The time is not now.
No, we didn't.
Oh, wait, that was the game we lost.
He lost, yeah.
Yeah, he did lose. And it was not fun to watch when he couldn't get out of it. But the first three innings were what I saw the first 4.5 months last year, first 60 games that he played with this team before. And that has to be encouraging considering how bad he was towards the end of last year. There's no way around it.
Don't get me
He's
wrong.
He's the fifth starter on this team. Who cares? Yeah, if he does anything good, we're good.
I agree. I agree, man. Like, don't get me wrong. It's not just Ryu. Like, of course we're going to shit on Berríos after that one first start.
For sure.
Like that was supposed to be our ace. You need to pitch better. And you know what? Even though Gausman wasn't great his first time out, I'm thinking, okay, I can accept this for today, but you need to pitch better. And to your credit, you said tonight you have every reason to believe that he will. And you have the confidence that he will. Ryu, I don't have confidence that he's going to pitch better.
I'm just asking you to focus on the first three innings. They were good.
I hear you, but the evidence...
and painted every single pitch in the first three innings.
The evidence from what we saw the majority of last season...
It wasn't the majority of last year, though. It was last month. His ERA going into the middle of August was 3.22. How does everybody forget that?
I'm just saying.
I mean, that's irrefutable.
Okay, fair.
You can believe look, what listen, you want. Listen, I'm saying, man.
Look. I want him to be good. I want him to pick well.
So the three innings you saw. That
no, was... I don't want to focus on that because I want the dub more than I want him to be good.
There it is.
I want this team. This team should be 161-1. That's what they should be.
Fit your narrative that you hate Ryu. That's what it's coming across.
No. I don't hate him. Sorry, Chris.
You're part of that camp too, man.
Chris, please get my back when it comes to Ryu.
You guys can gang up on me all you want. I'm setting
No.
I'm Switzerland here, boys.
Listen, I'm an island when it comes to Kevin, apparently. So.
Oh, wait. I forgot that Switzerland isn't Switzerland anymore because they even told Russia to go fuck themselves. Sorry. I say that out loud. Or Putin, at least.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I wasn't sold particularly on Kikuchi or Ryu this time around. I wasn't sold on any of the starting pitching, to be 100% honest, other than Manoah. All of them need to be better collectively, including Gausman. Gausman pitched all right, but not to the tune of, what, $125 million or whatever the hell they gave him. And it was his first start coming into Toronto, first start in a new tree, first start, but a lot of firsts for him. So tonight, you need to put up or shut up. And you need to get yourself ahead in counts, and then use that splitter to put guys away. Barrios started to come out of it and then kind of fell off again. But, you know, there's still some really good hitters in that Yankees lineup. I could shit on Judge all I want, and he is the most overrated player in the league. But
facts.
Those guys can still club the ball. And You throw a couple of hangers, they'll make you pay, especially in that ballpark. It's very unforgiving. Ryu.
Here we go.
I want him to do well.
Yes. Thank you.
I know you guys do. I'm just, at this point, this
I
is
want
fun.
Him to do well. It's just with the lack of velocity, and if he isn't going to live very closely on the edges, or if he starts getting pinched on a strike zone, he is going to have a hell of a time this year, especially in this division, especially with the circumstances revolving around this team that, like, they need him. They don't need him to be great, but they just need him to be good and steady. Mm-hmm. And if he isn't steady, he's going to have a lot more downs than he will up. And the drop in velocity really does worry me, and is, I don't think he was down much on Sunday, if anything at all last year. But if that starts dipping at all this year,
that's a problem.
It'll be a problem, and it'll be worse than what we saw, which gives reason to hope, and you really need Kikuchi to step up at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And not to be great, once again, because you have three guys ahead that should be great, but just be good. And hopefully they can put together a better game plan and Kikuchi lives and dies by the fastball, because he's got a friggin' live arm when he goes. He's boring as hell to watch. Like, he's like almost on Dolis level of boredom to watch pitch. But if he uses fastball more, he's going to go deeper into games, get himself out of more jams, and that's all you can ask for. Out of Ryu and Kikuchi, you're looking for 5 innings each.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you got to stay in the game for 5 innings and give us a shot. That's it.
But to that point where they're pitching in our rotation, that should be what we're expecting from them. They don't have to be the heavy innings eater.
No.
And then just to be this guy, nobody in fucking baseball ever hit more than 5 or 6 innings anymore. So, okay, fine, one guy. But to that point, we got Clayton Kershaw being taken out of a perfect game after 6 innings, 7 innings yesterday.
Lockout.
Yeah, I get the argument, but to that point, he's only one of two people ever to be removed from a game that was throwing a perfect game, And funny enough, I think this is the even better part. The Dodgers were the team that did it the other time, too, with Rich Hill.
Dave Roberts is the only manager to do it twice.
The only person in history to do it twice, period. So, anyway,
man.
But it's nuts. It's not. But to that point, we're in a different era of baseball, boys. The Roy Halladay, you know, workhorse guys are completely gone. You don't even see a guy even like when before, you know, when Gerrit Cole was doing well, he was still only throwing like seven innings, too. Yep. So we're in the bullpen era. And to live in the bullpen era, you better have some gas or some weird guys like Simba around that bullpen to be able to, you know, take care and get people out. So to that point, that's where this game is right now. And if we can get Ryu and Kikuchi to be able to do that, or anybody in our rotation for that, we're going to be just fine. We had the Cy Young Award winner that threw barely over two innings last year. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Key. How many did he throw? 212 or something? It sticks in my head that he was barely over 200 as he goes to Google.
He's the ex-girlfriend, dude. He doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He's out of the memory.
His name is Alec Manoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to that point, do you guys think that Alec Manoa throws 200 innings this year? And I don't think even to be in a Cy Young in either league this year, you need to be thinking he's going to throw 200 innings.
None of the five will throw 200.
Yeah. You were talking Ray, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Ray threw 193 innings last year.
I really think that a major league starter throws in the ballpark of 190, 180 innings these days. Yeah. If you're an ace.
And Ray missed a start or two as well, though. You don't remember.
Correct. But to that point, even most guys will get a day off here and there for whatever, just to, you know, especially
Stripling
for a playoff
starting tomorrow.
Or this or that. There you go.
Because Ryu needs an extra day off.
There you go.
One start needs an extra day.
Yeah, you don't want him.
But if that's the way baseball is these days, if you get 100, and the what was the basically Ryu's normal mean average of innings is an offer of 130 to 150, correct?
150 to 160, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you get that out of that, great. Get a little bit better than that on Kikuchi, and you keep working your way up the rotation. There's your season and all your innings that you're hoping for. So I guess it's...
I hear you. I just like to bust Brendan's balls. But look, let's
move on. You sure you're busting him, or are you like literally just
No. Because we're gonna close out.
Ribbing. That is healthy. That is
healthy. Yes. You know, no one likes
going.
Promise.
No one likes a grief fest on a podcast. So let's end this with the grief fest. Let's talk about Vladdy. We got about 10 minutes before the game starts, so let's zip through this. Last night alone, he was the first Blue Jay player ever to hit 3 home runs versus the Yankees. I think, like I said, he leads the entire MLB with 4 home runs. Not a huge milestone, but you know, 6 games in, it's impressive. He has a line as of this recording before the game starts on Thursday, 391, 479, 57 with an OPS of 1.373. Ridiculous. Yeah. It's safe to say that, what we saw last year wasn't a fluke, and it's carrying over into this year, and he hasn't even touched his prime yet, which is scary. That home run with the injured hand, It should have been a Doppler right to the third baseline, but somehow it got out of the park.
That's what I forgot to name that damn episode. I was gonna say it was only a flesh wound.
Yeah, and he's still playing tonight, so nothing is stopping this train. So Chris, we'll start with you. What do you think? Is this sustainable? Is he just a phenom? Is this his Ohtani year? Or you know, are we encouraged to pump the brakes a little bit?
I think what we should be talking about is about 14 years and $500 million.
Absolutely.
Is probably what we should be talking about. And you need to figure that out before it turns into 14 years and $600 million. And then you start trying to figure out how you're going to piece together around them.
The Acuna deal is looking like a deal right now. Just saying.
Yes. Yeah. The Tatis deal.
Yeah. This kid's a real deal. And, there's a lot of people that owe an apology to that young man that had him written off 2 years ago. But you know what? Kid's worked for it. Like, he has put in the work the last 2 years to get himself right and get himself well prepared for 162 games. And holy shit, this kid is fun to watch. Now, that last inning in the ninth inning last night, were you just not like itching for one of those boys to get on base so he could join that Carlos Delgado club? Like, he just wanted that fourth one. Like, it just
wanted it. I needed it.
Just needed a shot at it. You know what? There's going to be time, I think, for that, because I think there's going to be one or two more times where there's a multi-home run game that you can look forward to that. So enjoy the ride.
He's got two in April so far in his career.
Yeah. Let's enjoy the fun while we have it right now, because it's a treat watching that kid hit.
So not only was he the first guy to hit three home runs against the Yankees, he was also the first person to have three extra base hits in one game off of Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
So if most Major League Baseball sees Gerrit Cole as the epitome of all things pitching in Major League Baseball these days, which, debatable. But if you're following that gospel there, that is freaking nuts. And to that point where I don't think Josh Donaldson or anybody gets it to that home run ball that he got to on the inner half there. That thing is insane.
Nobody has. Gerrit Cole's thrown 2,000 or something of those in his career. In that same spot at 95 miles an hour. 95 miles an hour.
Nolan Arenado.
No, Vlad was the only one.
In
that area.
Really? Because they were talking
on the inside half of the plate, he's thrown like 2,000 something at 95 and above, and Vlad's the only one to hit one for a home run.
And did you see the second part of that, too? He's the only one to ever hit a Zach Britton sinker that's down low, like 96 or whatever the number is. Wow, it's wild.
Man. Either way, the guy's freaking nuts, and they were talking about it on MLB Network most of the day because he just had one of the most brilliant evenings of ever, regardless of the fact that he didn't hit four home runs, which was basically the only way he could have made his night even better, right? He had four extra base hits and led the team to victory. He's literally picking up the whole team and putting him on his back and just, marching into the sunset. That is the leader this team needs as far as, any level. That's MVP. Mm-hmm. That is the definition of MVP in my opinion, regardless of the stats being what they need to be, is the person that picks their team up and takes them with them to the promised land kind of thing is always the way I've seen the MVP award. We're seeing that right now with Vlad, and it's like I said, the movies were going. That is the best analogy ever. But the Major League Baseball Network was comparing today to Ken Griffey Jr. You don't mess with the swing. You just let Vladdy go be Vladdy, and here you go. That's where you're going. You're the kid. Just let it go. He's even doing the hat backwards there in the celebrations and stuff now. So, great. But if that's where we're heading, boys, God, fucking buckle me in. I'm ready for this. I've never had a player like this.
I'm ready to put some money down on him winning the Triple Crown, because if not for Ohtani last year, he would have come damn close. And I would not be surprised if he wins it. Whether it's this year, next year, some point in his career, he will be a Triple Crown winner. They said last night in the broadcast, his player comp right now would probably be Miguel Cabrera in his prime. Similar build, similar bat-to-ball skills, average on-base percentage, home runs, everything. And if the Blue Jays have themselves Miguel Cabrera in his prime, and you surround that with the crazy talent they have, I don't know how any Blue Jays fan in their right mind doesn't believe that they're going to win a World Series or two in the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. era. Like, it just feels like it's coming to that point where it's going to happen. I think he's going to...
Offensively, they might have the aggregate of that Miguel Cabrera thing, too, because he had V-Mart batting behind him all that damn time, and that's basically Teoscar Hernandez in a nutshell right now.
Exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins the MVP this year, either. Like, it's going to be a fun season, and let's just hope that he stays healthy for it all, because that would be the worst possible thing to ever happen in Toronto sports if he got injured for a prolonged period of time. I'm sure there's probably worse, like losing championships or whatnot, or the Leafs never winning up again, but still. He's incredible. There's no other way to put it.
I harp back to, and it pains me to do this, I harp back to like the Red Sox in those various championship runs with David Ortiz and whatnot, and you look back to that team and you'd say, yeah, David Ortiz was probably the best hitter. You could do Ramirez too, because he was on that team. So we'll just say Manny in 04. Manny was the best hitter and the best producer on that team, but you could make the argument that it might have been either Pedro or Schilling's team. They were the leader they were the clubhouse guy. If you were to choose one of them, I think it's sort of something similar here with the Jays, right? You have Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who is by far the biggest offensive producer on this team, and he's that fun-loving guy that will just light up a clubhouse. But if you had to pick a guy to anchor this team and say, like, no, he's the leader of the clubhouse, I would still put it in Springer's hands, honestly. And right. and I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I think, and Springer's still a fun-loving guy. He'll embrace
it. Say it's still about dancing and whatnot in the dugout and everything. I think that's a pretty good dynamic going on there regardless. They're both goofballs, and they both know how to hit.
Yeah, and I think Springer's the oldest fielder, a guy with the fishing right now on the team, right?
That's right, yeah.
That sounds about right.
So there you go. So I think when you have that sort of dynamic and you have the level that they are, not even scratching the surface of the potential that they will have, man, I have all the confidence in the world in Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And Chris, to echo your sentiments, I agree. You got to pay him now. You just have to get it done.
It's too exciting not to get it done.
Yeah, you got to lock him down. You got to lock Bo down. The only league without a salary cap, so take advantage of it. Just take advantage of it.
And hurry up and iron it out before there is another dumb agreement.
Pay your taxes. Pay whatever you got to do. Yeah. Just get in it and get it over with.
If he does win an MVP or a triple. Yeah, if he wins an MVP or a crown, that's only going up.
Yeah.
And if he wins both of them this year, you're up to 14 and 700 million. So
And not to mention, he's also rounding out to be a very good defensive first baseman. That play that he stuck out there, and yeah, he got
to end the game,
chewed up, and then that too.
Yeah,
he is figuring this game out, and I think it was Hazel May that said it last night that we're all just participants in the world that Vlad Jr. plays in, or something.
It's his world. We're just living in it.
That's it. That's what it was.
All right, let's wrap it up here with predictions. We got 3 at home versus Oakland. We're going to find out who is able to cross the border for that team. They beat the Rays, right? I mean, that's Oakland, maybe. So we're going to figure that out.
That was a fun game. I watched it because I couldn't watch the Blue Jays game because of, fucking Yes Network. sorry.
they're at second place in the West, only a game behind. It's early, but, maybe the A's are on something. I don't know. And then we got 3 in my neck of the woods at Boston. So let's go Craig, Chris, and Brendan. We'll go in that order. What are your predictions for these two series?
Oakland scared me. They actually took it to school against the frickin' Rays this week, but I don't think they have the pitching on where we're going to be landing in their rotation to make up for it. I think we missed Montas. Is that correct?
I was trying to
And not think- to mention, wasn't he traded... I thought he was traded or he was this close.
No, he was close.
He was close, but they wouldn't give up their top prospect for him.
There you go. So to that point, I figure we're gonna find a way to lose one to the Oakland A's. And to that point, the Red Sox they're gonna be pesky. I'm worried that we're gonna actually have another,
against them. Oakland, we face Jeffries, Blackburn, and Aller.
And who?
Aller.
Okay. One of those guys is going to be scrappy enough to beat us one game, as much as I don't want to say it. So I'm going to call 4-2, just like we did this last week. It's 2 series wins.
Chris?
2-1 and 2-1.
4-2 again. All right.
So 4-2.
Brendan?
3-3. They can make you do math.
3-3?
2-1 against Oakland. I have a bad feeling for some reason about
against
the Sox.
Are the Red Sox coming to Toronto?
No, we're going to Boston.
That's week after.
Boston.
Ah, shit.
The stretch that this team is entering is so important. You have Red Sox, Astros, Red Sox, Astros. You need to come out of that 15-15, 13-14.
Yeah, you got to come out 500.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm in agreement with you guys. 2-1, 2-1. This team has too much firepower to lose against the Red Sox in Fenway.
Hey,
they're going to mash.
You guys are right.
They're going to mash.
For some reason, a bad feeling.
I'm not too far off on you, especially, but to that point, if we could have found any offense the other day, I might be actually still in that conversation keeping the Yankees, but no.
And they can't lose the series, so there's that.
Can't lose the series, so that there is that. So
Craig,
back to,
what do we got? Picks to clicks. Who picked who last week, and who are we giving it to?
So last week, I had Lourdes, Chris had Springer, Chapman was yours, Adam, and then Gausman for Brendan. So to me, I'm going to say that seeing Springer kind of carry this team, I would say that my vote was on Springer.
Same.
George Springer for sure.
Same.
Yeah.
So Chris Key is on the board.
All right.
Win it, I win it your own game.
And he gets to pick first. Hey, it's your game now too, man.
Oh. Yeah, as I say, you're this, remember you like joined this official group? I know we have like $5 in funding from our sponsor, but it's still funny.
Yours. What's your pick? Who is your pick to click? We'll go Chris, Brendan, Craig, Simber. And myself. Are you being serious?
Yeah, I'm being serious. Okay. Adam Simber.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. If he has a few good weeks out of the bullpen, or a few good starts out of the bullpen, or come out of the bullpen, you know, it's not the worst. So yeah. carry the pen.
Guy who wasn't chosen last week, and I'm hoping swings the bat now, is Bo Bichette.
Yeah, because you just did. You are you watching this right now?
I just what? Got a double. He just
got a nice little clean hit double.
Oh no, I actually do not have him on.
Yeah,
I will be going to put
technically it on. Tonight counted toward last week.
Yeah, tonight doesn't count. Yes, tonight doesn't count. We picked that last week.
Nice, nice swing right in there, almost a home run.
Okay, great. Hopefully that's the start of a win.
Yeah,
stroke,
Craig.
Who's taking Vladdy, the cheat code?
Vladdy's the cheat code, yes.
Yeah, who's taking the cheat code?
You know what the funny thing is? I
who's
almost
desperate
because of how
enough
much
for a win?
Can we bar Vladdy? Can we? In order to pick Vladdy, you have to win three in a row.
That's a great
lose three in a row.
No. Yes. Let's do that. No, because we collectively lose. So let's do. You have to win three in a row in order to get Vladdy.
I
just
like
to be that guy.
Yeah. Yes.
Just to be that guy, last year he got picked not very often, and there was a few weeks that he got picked and he didn't do shit.
Still say three in a row. Let's,
okay, whatever. Let's I'm fine with it. I wasn't going to pick him anyway.
We can reevaluate, but for now.
Yeah.
See, because I carry over on my pick, because without Teoscar in the lineup, he needs to step up, especially when they're moving him basically into the four hole in Lourdes Gurriel Jr.
Yeah, that's...
I need Lourdes to have a week, and I want to be the one that says, yeah, I picked him.
given the trends with his presence in a lineup, in the lineup, rather, I'm going to go Espinal.
There you go.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Espinal.
I need to win, Chris.
You Espinal.
That's not a bad pick. It would be weird if he picked Biggio.
I actually really like Simber pick, I'm not going to lie. And I did think of it before the show.
So in the midst of all this fun, though, that we were just talking about, at least they brought back, I forgot how to say his Gosuke Katoa. They brought him back up.
Yep.
How many innings do you think over the next week Biggio actually plays in the outfield? Because of the Zimmer Tapia bullshit.
I don't think he starts any game. It's probably a handful, maybe.
Probably more.
Or under on 10 innings?
Under.
Yeah, I'd go under two.
Depends, because if you put Gurriel at DH, you could hide Biggio in left for a game in Fenway. So Gurriel just got hurt.
Great. So you had to say that right after I made the pick.
Yeah.
God,
an audio.
Just got hit. God,
that's no fun.
Yeah, it doesn't look great.
You're not helping me.
I'm just
telling
you what I see.
Look,
Manoa's already screaming at him.
Get him. Okay. And then Barrios will follow, right?
They're probably Yankees.
They're both
that
the top step.
Yeah, anywho. He's yelling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Anyway, so how about we wrap this up so we can go yell at the TV?
Yep.
Okay. All right, guys. So we appreciate you listening. Subscribe to us on all your favorite podcatchers, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast stream from, we are there. If you want to watch us on video or on YouTube, Twitter, wherever you watch your video feed, we are there live. We're looking for every Thursday evening around 7:30, so tune in for us there. One last word before we go. Go Raptors. They're in the playoffs. And I know this is not an NBA podcast, but I believe any Eastern team can win. I really do. I feel like any team in the East can beat any other team in the East and make it to the NBA Finals. But that being said, let's end this like we always do. Two claps. Ric Flair. Let's go Blue Jays.
Woo!
Let's go Blue Jays.
Blue Jays.